Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Impartial Juries and the Sixth Amendment Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 11, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Pena-Rodriguez v. Colorado. Miguel Angel Pena-Rodriguez was convicted of unlawful sexual conduct and harassment in state trial court. Two jurors later informed Pena-Rodriguez's counsel that another juror made racially biased statements about Pena-Rodriguez and an alibi witness during jury deliberations. The trial court authorized counsel to contact the two jurors for their affidavits detailing what the allegedly biased juror had said. Pena-Rodriguez moved for a new trial after learning from the affidavits that the juror had suggested Pena-Rodriguez was guilty because he was Hispanic, and this juror considered Hispanic males to be sexually aggressive toward females. According to the affidavits, the juror also deemed the alibi witness not credible because, among other things, that witness was an illegal. The trial court denied the motion, and a divided Supreme Court of Colorado ultimately affirmed, applying Colorado Rule of Evidence 606B, which prohibits juror testimony on any matter occurring during the jury deliberations, and finding that none of the exceptions to the rule applied. In the dissenter's view, however, Rule 606B should have yielded to the defendant's constitutional right to an impartial jury. The question now before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether a no-impeachment rule constitutionally may bar evidence of racial bias offered to prove a violation of the Sixth Amendment right to an impartial jury. To discuss the case, we have John C. Richter, who is partner at King & Spalding. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Richter.
Today, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the case of Pena-Rodriguez versus Colorado. The specific question before the court is whether the Sixth Amendment right to a fair and impartial jury compels the creation of an exception to a state evidentiary rule that mirrors Federal Rule of Evidence 606B. That generally bars attempts after a verdict to impeach that verdict based on allegations of misconduct by jurors, in this case to account for allegations of racial bias by a juror. In the case, the Colorado Rule of Evidence 606B, like its federal counterpart, prohibits a juror from testifying as to any matter or statement occurring during the course of the jury's deliberation, or to the effect of anything upon his or any other juror's mind or emotions as influencing him to assent to or dissent from the verdict or indictment or concerning his mental processes. The rule is sometimes referred to as the no impeachment rule, and this rule was recognized in England and in the United States at common law as early as the 17th century. It's been codified at the federal level much more recently by the Supreme Court and Congress and embodied in Federal Rule of Evidence 606B, which was codified in 1975. More recently, the court in Tanner versus the United States in 1987 and then 2 years ago in Warger versus Showers has upheld 606B as consistent with the Sixth Amendment. In our federal system, however, we have for many years had first, at the state level, a minority of states that have recognized limited exceptions to their no impeachment rules, holding effectively that in extreme circumstances, like evidence of a blatant use of race by a juror in considering guilt or innocence, a defendant may seek to challenge the underlying basis of the verdict. Specifically in this case, Pena-Rodriguez was convicted of unlawful sexual assault with a 16-year-old girl and harassment based on illegal physical contact with the 16-year-old and also with a 14-year-old girl that was with her. The jury considered the evidence but was unable to reach the verdict on a felony charge of attempted sexual assault on a child, which required proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Pena-Rodriguez took a substantial step toward knowingly touching the 14-year-old's intimate parts. The 14-year-old testified, however, that although Pena-Rodriguez had touched her shoulder, he had not grabbed her breast. So the jury acquitted on the felony charge. After the verdict and the jury was dismissed, defense counsel in this case spoke with the jurors, and two jurors reported that another juror had made racially biased statements during the deliberations. The state trial court then gave defense counsel permission to receive the jurors' contact information and to obtain their affidavits. The two jurors reported that another juror, labeled in the case as under the initials HC, had made four different offensive remarks that showed substantial prejudice by that particular juror against Mexican men. And, of course, the defendant and petitioner in this case is of Mexican origin. The petitioner then moved for a new trial. The trial court denied that motion based on Colorado's no impeachment rule, and then on appeal, that was upheld both at the Colorado Appellate Court of Appeals and at the Colorado Supreme Court. The Colorado Supreme Court affirmed the trial court's decision, holding that the application of the no impeachment rule did not violate the Sixth Amendment right to an impartial jury, and the court reasoned that existing Supreme Court precedent, including the Tanner and Warger cases, as well as earlier cases, stood for the principle that protecting the secrecy of jury deliberations was of paramount importance, and that protecting the finality of verdicts and ensuring full and frank jury deliberations and promoting jury independence and preserving confidence in the jury system itself outweighed a particular defendant's interest in seeking an exception when a defendant had other ways to preserve their Sixth Amendment right to an impartial jury, ways such as in voir dire, in questioning jurors prior to their selection, in exercising strikes to take part of jury selection, as far as ensuring instructions by the court that would ensure impartial consideration of the evidence in the case, and consideration of the law, and policing of other misconduct that might be raised and brought to the attention of the court before the verdict is rendered. Today at the Supreme Court, then, petitioner obviously challenged the Colorado Supreme Court's reasoning. Arguing for the petitioner was Professor Jeffrey Fisher from Stanford, and he made a number of important points. First, he argued that many court jurisdictions at the state level allow for inquiry post-verdict of a jury verdict without some parade of horribles occurring. Secondly, that in this case, the petitioner was asking for a racial bias exception and that any other potential exceptions were not presented for the court. Third, that race is unique in our history and that, as Mr. Fisher put it, quote, racism has been the stain on our entire judicial system, unquote, and that the court had recognized race-based exceptions and the unique nature of racial bias under its 14th Amendment jurisprudence, and that that had not led inexorably to a multitude of other exceptions for other types of, on other bases that swallowed other criminal rules or procedures, and therefore that while this case was about the Sixth Amendment, the values underlying the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause should infuse the court's thinking with regard to the application of the Sixth Amendment in this context. Now, during Mr. Fisher's argument, he was pressed pretty hard by the Chief Justice and Justice Alito about why race was really different in the context of ensuring a fair and impartial trial. They pressed him about the fact that the court in earlier cases, for example, had denied prior challenges to the no impeachment rule where other great misconduct had occurred. For example, where a juror had been drunk and used drugs during the deliberations, where a jury had decided the case allegedly based on a coin flip. And these justices were asking why it would be more appropriate to create a racial bias exception dealing with the unfairness, potential unfairness of a verdict, but not for these other circumstances when obviously those gave rise to a high likelihood that the verdict was not reached in a fair and impartial manner. Justice Alito and the Chief Justice questioned the difficulty of line drawing in this context and were raising really the question of, if you create an exception for racial bias, how do you not essentially undermine the entire rule for other misconduct that rendered the verdict questionable? They asked the question as to whether it would essentially run counter to common law notions of federalism and the Supreme Court and Congress's rulemaking in balancing the competing interests as have been done before. And that notion of line drawing was not just unique to the Chief Justice and Justice Alito. As Justice Kagan put it, everyone is afraid of opening the door. Colorado, in turn, was represented by Frederick Yarger, the current Solicitor General in Colorado, and he tried to reinforce the points that the Chief Justice and Justice Alito had been trying to make in pressing petitioner's counsel. Mr. Yarger, in turn, was pressed by Justices Kagan, Ginsburg, and Kennedy. Justice Kagan asked him questions about how extreme would be enough to become an exception. Justice Kennedy asked him if this were a capital case, whether the racial bias exhibited by the one juror would be a basis for a post-verdict challenge. Mr. Yarger gamely said no, it shouldn't be. Justice Ginsburg asked him why voir dire was enough to protect impartiality, as she made the point that many lawyers don't ask about race or won't ask about race because they don't, for fear that they will put race into the thoughts of jurors. Mr. Yarger, in my judgment, handled that particular question deftly, noting that social science, at least as quoted in their briefing, suggested that express questions designed to encourage people not to rely on biases have a tendency to make people seek to overcome their actual and implicit biases. The amicus in at oral argument was the United States Department of Justice, which was represented by an assistant to the Solicitor General. Rachel Carver, on behalf of the United States, argued that race has not been treated differently from other forms of misconduct under the Sixth Amendment jurisprudence, and that the creation of an exception would incur substantial costs for the criminal justice system. She also reiterated the four factors underlying the balance that had been struck by the Supreme Court and Congress in enacting the no impeachment rule at the federal level. Number one, that voir dire of potential jurors would and could mitigate any racial bias risks. Two, that jury reporting about juror misconduct before a verdict could also mitigate and ensure an impartial process. Three, that an exception could extend, that any exception would be indistinguishable from religious or sexual orientation or other biases, and that therefore that this was effectively a slippery slope to undercutting the entire rule itself. And then five, then, that notions of federalism should dictate that the rule not be imposed through constitutional jurisprudence, but rather could be done, obviously, simply on a state-by-state basis, as each state saw as just. Now, Justice Breyer interjected during Ms. Corver's argument on behalf of the United States. He noted that the parade of horribles and that it was feared by imposing this post-verdict questioning of the verdict hadn't been seen in the majority of states that had an exception to the no impeachment rule. That he noted that he hadn't heard of any swamping of those state courts with lots of litigation. Ms. Corver deflected that by pointing out that the courts and Congress had always recognized that seeking new trial is different than other contexts in the criminal justice process because of the need for finality, the need to avoid jury tampering and harassment of jurors, and the need to essentially have confidence that a jury's verdict is worthy of credence. She emphasized that the court and Congress had balanced competing interests, and that states had also done so, and that not creating an exception in this case would still leave it open to states to create exceptions if they chose, as a minority of states have already done. And this was, of course, the federalism point present in this case. Ms. Korber then acknowledged that in the context of capital cases, the Eighth Amendment might yield different considerations, and that concession then was seized on by Jeff Fisher, petitioner's counsel, in rebuttal. He noted that all the parties are seeking a balance, to balance these competing considerations. But if structural considerations could be recognized under the Eighth Amendment when looking at the Sixth Amendment, then structural considerations also should be recognized with regard to the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause on the Sixth Amendment. And he emphasized that where inappropriate racial consideration infuses a case, there must be, and the court must impose, a constitutional failsafe, and that racial bias can never be the lesser of evils. In this case, there was very active questioning by the members of the court. While the nature of the questions to some degree highlighted the respective corners from which each of the justices were coming at the problem, they clearly were all struggling with a case in which all the parties agreed the juror had engaged in misconduct and showed inappropriate racial bias. And, of course, for even those justices who seemed to lean towards trying to find a way to not create an exception to the rule, it clearly didn't feel good to be doing nothing about it based on this record. But as they say, of course, hard cases can make bad law, and the justices were also concerned about the implications of creating an exception, as it would seemingly open doors to additional issues to be decided.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.